If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Being one of the only black faces on the basketball team, on the football team, or in the community was unique because I had to learn the tolerance of people's challenges and how they see the world, particularly dealing with of racism, and not just racism, but really ignorance. I would call it just a level of ignorance and fear. I was running her temporary side of the company. Her son was running the managed placement side of the company, and he didn't, for whatever reason, didn't like me just because of my relationship with his mother. And it wasn't a relationship like that. It was just a mentor-mentee relationship, but the immaturity of him did not understand that. And so one day she comes in, she terminates me.
Wow.
And it was probably the most devastating experience mentally for me at that time. And I said at that point, I'd never go work for anybody else. My life, by God's mercy, has been a tapestry of learning to where I'm at today. And we're going to get, I'm going to fast forward and get to where we are. But it took these types of calculated experiences. It wasn't an academic process. It was a life process.
Hey, wait. I know you want to watch this next video, but listen, if you are an entrepreneur, business coach, business consultant, or a small business owner who has a story and wants to learn how to create multiple streams of income from your story, I need you to text me right now, my book, to 646-687-4152. That is my personal number. I have been an author for over 12 years. I've written 10 books. 4 of them have been bestsellers, and I've sold over 100,000 books. But I've also helped a lot of my clients take their expertise and put it into a story, then create multiple streams of income from that. So I want to help you do the same thing. So text my book to 646-687-4152. All right, let's go back to the video. So welcome to another awesome episode of Inside the Vault with Ash Cash, the greatest money mindset show on the planet. Today, I have an exciting guest with us today in a city where gentrification threatens to price out longtime residents. One visionary entrepreneur is fighting to preserve the economic vitality of his Atlanta's historical black neighborhoods. Latron Price, the co-owner and managing operator of the Westside Community Market, has dedicated his career to ensuring local producers and farmers, many of them people of color, have the resources and infrastructures they need to thrive. Since founding the 65,000 square foot facility in 2012, Price has provided critical access to cold storage, distribution services, and incubator office spaces addressing key barriers that have long prevented Black-owned small businesses from scaling up. This support has paid dividends, with studies showing that 81% of farmers of color report increased sales after accessing community-oriented food hubs like the Westside Market. But Price's mission extends beyond just boosting bottom lines. By connecting consumers directly with local growers, the market cultivates a culture of socially conscious production and consumption, no small feat in an industry where African Americans make up just 1.4% of farm operations world or nationwide. Through educational programming and community events, Price is empowering his neighborhood to take pride in their culinary heritage and invest in more equitable local food systems. As gentrification and corporate consolidation continues to reshape the landscape, Latron Price's work has never been more vital. His unwavering commitment to lifting up marginalized producers is not only a heartening success story, but a blueprint for achieving true economic justice in the heart of the South. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for my brother, Latron Price.
Yes, sir.
Peace and blessings, brother.
Peace and blessings.
Man,
you know. That's beautiful, man.
Thank you
for your energy,
yes,
man.
Yes,
that just—it's invigorating,
yes,
brother.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you, man, because like you know, I've been a financial educator for 20 years. Right, I started teaching financial education in 2004. So 2024 is my 20-year anniversary. And part of the reason I wanted to teach financial education was as a banker. You know, I was managing money for wealthy individuals who did not look like me.
Right.
And me being from the hood and, you know, understanding the plights of what we go through as a community, my goal was around, you know, educating people so they could build the wealth or close the wealth gap. As I started making money and getting, you know, deeper into this space, I realized that income is not it.
Right.
It's not just about making money, especially when someone has the ability to stop you from making money,
yeah.
Right? Like you, if you don't own the supply chain, if you don't
right.
own a lot of the ways that we feed ourselves,
right.
Someone could stop that. So when I first met you and heard about what you did, I said, wow, this is a brother.
I mean...
Right? Like, I read Powernomics, right? And so Dr. Claude Anderson was talking about you, right? When he talked about, like, being able to control the supply chain,
yeah.
I said, man, this brother's doing some big things. And so I'm happy to have you here to share you with our audience. And we're going to get into a lot of what you do. But for those who don't know, in your words,
yeah.
who is Latron Price?
Wow, wow, wow. Big, big question. Big, big, big discovery. So, first I'm going to say Bismillah. So I'm a believer in my Lord, in our Creator, who created the heaven, the earth, the sun, the moon, and all that exists. I'm a husband and my father, and I'm a brother, and I'm a community member. So those are the foundations that shape Brother Latron.
Yes, sir.
And in that space of family life, community, friendships, brotherhoods. You know, I would say that I've been in a trajectory or a process of learning of knowledge.
Yeah.
And so as a student, you know, my foundation comes from just observation. And in that observation, I try to navigate, you know, what are sort of solutions to problems that, you know, we're being presented with.
Yeah.
And it's a discovery. It's not something that you have right away. That discovery takes patience. Mm-hmm. It takes a real integrity of your self-inspection.
Yeah.
You know, my father was in the military. We traveled growing up, and we lived in, you know, multiple, every 3 years we moved. We lived in Germany. We lived in New York, way upstate New York. My brothers and I were only black kids in school from K through 12. We lived in St. Louis, where it's all black, 100% of our people. And St. Louis is home to our family, my mom's side, dad's side. I have a big family in St. Louis. We have, on my dad's side, there's 12. He had 12 siblings. On my mom's side, she had 9 siblings. And those average had about 5 children. And then their children had an average of maybe, like in my family, there's 6 of us. And so we have a big, big family in Missouri, St. Louis. And then we also lived in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And so growing up, moving, like, you know, Fort Bragg, I'm thinking of all these different places we lived growing up. And growing up, that diversity of being able to move and go to a new place, find new friendships, engage with people differently, sort of set a beautiful tapestry of my life moving forward from a childhood and having this, having these experiences with new individuals. And more importantly, you know, really having seen the diversity of people's energy. And this is the, I think this is probably one of the most valuable assets that God has given me, is to be able to meet people, deal with people, and experience people, and then find common ground. And so that was something that we had to learn very early. You know, we grew up in the hip hop era. And hip hop was is global. So we're in Germany and we had breakdancing crews. And so with our breakdancing crews, we went on this tour across Germany in the 80s. And we were cold. And so we won national championships and stuff.
So you could break that.
Oh, we break and pop and all that. Yeah, yeah. We had myself and my older brothers, my brother Tommy, he's Tom Muhammad now. My brother Pee Wee, we call him his name's Tanolan, we call him Pee. And my other younger brother Tobias, and man, we had our homeboys, our crews, and man, we had a b-boy set. So, you know, I remember in Germany as a young person, we would go on these, we go to Frankfurt, we go to these big concerts, be all white folks there. You know, we have some diversity, some little mix of our folk, but hip hop culture was so impactful in Germany.
Wow.
Okay. And in the 80s, wow. In the 80s, yeah. And the Berlin Wall was still up, right? And so, you know, that those experiences on a global scale also helped me see the world from a global lens, yeah, as a young person.
Yeah.
So, you know, fast forward, you know, coming to, you know, I guess I'm going to start a little bit my professional career. Well, let me start with a little bit of, I went to Talladega College first year. My parents, actually, this is a very turning point. My parents, they divorced. And when they divorced, they went into separate directions. And we had a very tight-knit family, which kind of caused us to scatter in different directions. And so my brother and I, one of my other brothers, we became rebellious.
How old were you when you were
in? And I was in 9th grade in high school.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So my dad got stationed upstate New York. And after going through the divorce for him, there was an impact in his mind, and that I didn't know until I was a full adult to really understand what was going on. And at the same time, it was the impact on us as young people. We were rebellion. We're like, okay, this is different. So, which caused my brother and I to, like, yo, we left home. So we decided to leave home. Still went to school. Still did our work. But when we left, up in New York, we just tried to learn to fend for ourselves. Okay. There was different nights where, you know, we slept outside. You know what I'm saying? And there was some nights where we found our homeboys, went to school with, and his mom let us sleep down on the couch. You know what I'm saying? We just, like, we doing a sleepover. But it was a process of discovery. There was a part of it where was in New York in 10th grade. Went to a school called Lowville Academy. And in that space, it was also unique based on a framework that being one of the only black faces on the basketball team, on the football team or in the community was unique because I had to learn the tolerance of people's challenges and how they see the world, particularly dealing with a racism, and not just racism, but really ignorance. I would call it just a level of ignorance and fear. It's funny, you know, and I don't know how much time we got. I'm going to just some background stuff, but since we're here, we might as well. It's funny. I just got this picture the other day ago, and it's why it came up for me. My nephew sent me. He's doing his genealogy, and he sent this picture. I was online, and I hadn't seen this in I don't know how long. Let me show you this here. So we look at this basketball.
Wow.
Okay. It really was that. It looked like this, you know.
Wow.
The world.
We're going to have to show this. We're going to have to cut this in. Right? So I don't know if you can see that. But this is a picture of him on a basketball team. And you can tell we're Latron.
It's the only black guy on there, right? You know? And so that extreme from going from an all-black environment or even a mixed environment to that environment was culturally developmental for me. And when I was there, I worked on a farm. There's a Slosky family. You know, they may even see this. They had large cattle farms up there. And on those farms, they milk cows. And that was my first introduction to a farm in high school.
Wow.
And I did it because they were paying.
Wow.
And the Slosky needed labor.
Wow.
And so we was up there, you know, had the machines, and he was a friend. So, he embraced me as well. Mm-hmm. And see the milk coming through the machines and going through it. And next thing you know, it ends up in grocery stores. These are cattle farms with, you know, 1,500 plus head of cattle.
You were able to see that at a young age,
right,
of being able to milk the cows,
right,
and then see that production,
right,
and seeing it in the stores,
right,
and is that from that time when you're seeing this, did that pique your interest to say yes? When I become an adult, this is what I'm going to be doing?
Not at all.
Wow.
Not at all. Like I said, my life, by God's mercy, have been a tapestry of learning to where I'm at today. And we're going to get, I'm going to fast forward and get to where we are. But it took these types of calculated experiences. It wasn't an academic process. It was a life process of observation. The Prophet Abraham, you know, so grateful to have learned about Abraham's trajectory of learning how to identify God and how to find the oneness in God versus having this this theology of polytheism where you see a stone, let's call it gold, and that gold has value and force and power, or a diamond or coal. And so when they had these statues and the prophet was saying to his fathers in the community that these statues are not the gods, the God of the universe is so much greater than this, and it's a one God. And so for me, you know, in that farm experience and being in Lowville, New York, having the experiences where my brother and I walking down the street and someone yells out the word, "Niggas, wow, get out of here."
Wow.
Okay. Walking out, and I got a good friend. His brother's a beautiful brother. His name is Danny Myers. And Danny he was a quarterback on the football team. He was also on the basketball team as well. And Danny and I became close. We're cool. You know, I was running back, me and a guy named Slosky, and Danny was a quarterback, and we had a certain bond, and we would go to parties, and we'd go to these parties, and they would be like, "Who brought the niggas?"
Wow.
Like, who brought these niggas, right? And And Danny be like, "Oh man, yo, I'm sorry, man. We gotta go. They tripping. It's gonna be a problem. So let's go and get out of here." Yeah. And you know, we're like, "Yo, what's up with that?" Mm-hmm. So and it was cool. When I say it was cool, it was a process of learning to understanding culture. Mm-hmm. But what that did in that at that early age, it allowed you to accept the diversity of opinions. Mm-hmm. In a way that was adversarial, but also humbling,
right?
Because we knew we were great, like we were popular. Like not only because we're black, we popular. You know what I'm saying? Right. But we were good in our grades. Yeah. We were leaders in the community. We was involved in different activities, and so and then we had a special, just sort of a special connection.
Yeah.
And so from that. I ended up going to St. Louis. My father got stationed again, and he ended up going back to St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And so, well, let me share this real quick. So during that period, my brother Tommy graduated from high school and ended up going down to Syracuse, and he was introduced to the Nation of Islam. Mm. And because we had this hunger for our people, mind you, this is about I spent about 2 years in Lowville, New York, where we, in that particular isolated environment. And my brother was introduced to Elijah Muhammad through Minister, Honorable Minister Farrakhan. And so he sent me these tapes. So while I'm up there, we got this revolutionary mindset in the mix of this, right? Yeah. And mind you, Yo MTV Raps was like, you know, on. So we rush on to see Yo MTV Raps and hip-hop just to connect back to the black culture.
Right.
Mine is like being, you know, I can imagine being in a prison where you're taken away from all your friends and all your environment, mm-hmm. and now you're forced to adapt in this new environment with restraints.
Yeah.
And so as this beautiful thing was taking place, Tommy became a student minister in the Nation. And obviously, he was my bigger brother, so you know, I began to follow some of the consciousness that he was feeding me. But also, you know, going to, like, one thing about the school we went to, it was a really good school. I remember going to Canada, and we went to sit in Parliament. These are nuggets that helped me later on. That's why I'm giving this background. We're in Parliament, and we were watching the debates of healthcare in Canada, offering free healthcare. And also what that meant to the agricultural system as well. It's very unique. All this is tied into each other. And this is way back then. Mm-hmm. So after we go through that, I end up going to St. Louis. And then from St. Louis, I end up having a teacher named Mrs. Shedd to say, hey, you should go to HBCU. Mm-hmm. And so I end up going to Talladega College in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And then I transferred from Talladega to Tennessee State University. Mm-hmm. And then from Tennessee State, you know, I wanted to play football. That's why I went to Tennessee State. Talladega did not have a football team. And so I transferred to Tennessee State to do that, start building a family during this period. And then as I went through that process, I went to work for a company, learned corporate America, you know, really, really understanding that, became a national sales manager for a company. And right out of college, man, 20-something years old, you know, and flying to different cities. They give you a credit card. They give you a rental car. You got to open the office up. You know, they trained me how to open the office up, hire the management staff, hire the staff, get the office annualized to $500,000 a year, and then go to the next city. And so they trained me on how to set up business up from scratch. And I did that for a period of time, very young, came to Atlanta, you know, having a ball. And one day, this was a major, major transition for me, was there was a husband and wife team. The husband and wife split. Bonnie Pollock was her name. The name of the company was called Food Team. And Bonnie, I went to work for her. And she was someone I had a tremendous amount of respect for. One of the, probably the person who showed me so much love and development. And when they split, I was running her temporary side of the company. Her son was running the managed placement side of the company. And he didn't, for whatever reason, didn't like me just because of my relationship with his mother. And it wasn't a relationship like that. It was just a mentor-mentee relationship. But the immaturity of him did not understand that. And so one day she comes in and she terminates me.
Wow.
And it was probably the most devastating experience mentally for me at that time. And I said at that point, I never go work for anybody else. So since 1999, I have not had to work for anybody else.
Wow.
And I had the training of how to deal with people and the different diversities of people. And then God has blessed us with having the experience of how to set a business up. So I opened a staffing agency here in Atlanta in 99 called American Food Staffing. Mm. And we became the number one employer in the city, over 1,500 plus staff members.
Wow.
We serviced the Marriotts, all the Marriott hotels, country clubs. We did the World Congress Center. 24, 25 years old, and this is in '99 when Atlanta was like popping, and we the young corporate gurus, and mostly we go into the club, hanging out, wow. And then go right to work. And so you know we learned a lot about, and we watched Atlanta become a really unique place. And how I chose Atlanta was looked at the map, and it's like, yo, we're gonna go to Black Mecca. We're gonna start a business, and we're going to go to Atlanta. And so I ended up coming to Atlanta. And that was the first real business that I was able to start on my own, where we did very well by God's mercy. We ended up selling that business to a company that was in conjunction with Proof of the Pudding. Proof of the Pudding was this big caterer here in Atlanta. Wow. And from that, went over to Dubai with another guy named Kevin Griffin, started International Supply and Construction, and was doing a lot of trade and supply work. And then from that, and I was learning that, he was the lead of that, and he trained me in that space. With him, invested in this group called Inertia Petroleum. We got into a petroleum business where we were we were minority supplier to Avis Rental Car and Budget out of Missouri, St. Louis. And there was another brother that was there. The business was doing well, but it didn't do enough in volume. So we weren't seeing big returns. Got invested in these microtels, all kinds of different things. This is prior to 2008. And as these businesses begin to wind down, you know, it was very interesting because the market changed. And so it was like, okay, what are we going to do? And the Iraq, what we're doing in Dubai, we were supporting the supply chain for the Iraq war. And we were supplying from Umm Qasr port that was through Kuwait and then into Iraq.
Oh, wow.
And we were supplying sugar, toilet tissue. So that was my first entry of trade, like really understanding it. And came back to Atlanta, and my brother Kevin was like, Latron, what are we going to do? And I was like, man, I think I'm going to go to Africa. He was like, man, I think I'm going back to Dubai, man. I'm going to go ahead and set something back up in Dubai. And I was like, okay. And so he ended up headed back to Dubai, and I went to Africa, and I went to go spend a year in Africa. Well, initially I was going to spend just a couple weeks, and it was on a spiritual trip. Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm going to Africa to understand my roots. Really, it was following Alex Haley. I had a little bit of opportunity, free time. When I say free time, I had some spiritual time, landed in Dakar, Senegal, and then took a driver into the Gambia, and that's when God really showed me where wealth is created, how wealth is created. Yeah. He was able to take the scriptures. So as a young man, we grew up in a church. Uh-huh. And so in the church, you read the Bible and you learn Isa or Jesus. And you really learn the process of the Old Testament into the New Testament and the transition between the coming of Christ. And you learn a lot about some of the old ways, but you don't really get the wisdom of it. You can, but you really got to be well studied. But the surface of it, it didn't give you this wisdom. It gave you this foundation of information. But as I got more into Islam and I start reading the Quran, all my training of reading the Bible just became more clear to me. And the beauty about the Quran, when I went to Africa, it was like the lightning rod of knowledge, the lightning rod of an understanding was when you hear these prayers, you know, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, you hear these prayers and they're all black faces, not the Middle East, yeah. You're in Africa. Yeah. And then they begin to share with you the history of this African culture. Yeah. And then you see the beauty of the African science behind the prayers. And when I saw that and was experiencing that, and some, you know, they call them, some of them things miracles. Mm-hmm. You know, you see these amazing things that happen. And it helped, it freed my mind of the way I've been trained to be free to think.
Yeah.
You know, and on the way, I'm gonna pause. I know we could pause this. Y'all got control of this whole thing. So, on the way, when I landed in Dakar, and I got the driver, it's my first day in Africa, and this is the most memorable part for me. I landed at 6 in the morning, so it was kind of dark still. And I couldn't see nothing. I'm excited to see Africa for the first time. And as I come out the airport, I find the driver. I get my bag, get in the car. Mind you, they got the drums, and everybody, you know, they got the excitement for the American flight that just came over. And I'm by myself, so I'm solo camping, right? And, you know, they tell us, you know, when you're, you know, you hear about the European kids backpacking across Africa. I'm like, okay, now I'm an adult, man. I'm about to backpack across Africa, right? And so I get the car. We're driving. As we're riding, I fall asleep in the car. And the car all of a sudden starts shaking. I wake up. It's like we're shaking. And I said, sir, what's going on? He says, oh, the road ran out. So now we're running through a field in the car. And to the right of me is the ocean. And it's beautiful, beautiful ocean. And to the left of me, this is open land. And this, the sun is about 10 o'clock. So it's shining on this, I'm thinking sand at the time, making it look like diamonds. Mm. And I see these little, two little kids out in the middle of nowhere. And they got a bucket. And they're down there scraping on a bucket. And I ask the driver, I said, sir, what are these kids doing out here? He says, Mr. Price, they're gathering local salt. Mm. I said, you telling me all that is salt?
Wow.
And he said, yeah. I said, wow. And when I tell you, it was as far as I could see, this shiny diamond-looking sand turned out to be a salt bed.
Wow.
And so I asked the driver, I was like, is there a salt production plant around here? And that was the first thing that came to my mind. He says, yeah, there's one in Cowlick. I said, okay, Cowlick. And so this is a place that's in between Banjo and Dakar and Banjo. I'm on the way to Banjo. And so we stopped there, and one of his cousins worked there, and they showed me around. And I found that Morton's with the umbrella. They picked their stuff off the ground. They put it in these big old totes with these big trucks. Then they put them in these totes, and they load them on the trucks, and they ship them out. And it's what God gave us for free.
Wow.
So seeing that was like, oh man, I could just get in the salt business.
Yeah.
Okay. I could just harvest salt. Yeah. It's free. God made it.
Yeah.
The tide comes in, the tide goes out, it dries around the land, and you got salt.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a part of this lightning rod of knowledge that came. And then spending time in the Gambia went to a place called Bufut. Mm-hmm. And Bufut is a very, very special place. There's a brother. We call him Sonny High Dollar, but the Opa, who was the Marabu, who's they call him Shadef High Dollar, the descendant of the prophet Shadef High Dollar, and to hear them make the prayers at this orphanage, and these children come out with these wood tablets and they're writing on this wood, I knew I was in a special ancient space. Wow. And I know God has something very special for my life as I'm there and listening to this, and then to bathe in those prayers, because they give you these prayers to bathe in, and you're going through a cleansing process. And through that, I end up coming back to Atlanta and say, hey, look, I need to start where my feet are. Wow. So I'll go into that in the next section.
Wow! I'm glad that you gave us that backdrop, because I think that, you know, for me, just hearing, all right, as a kid you worked at this farm,
right,
and to now know like you the distribution for real, right?
Right.
You know, full circle. I'm thinking that is where that started, but it's almost like the like alchemists, right? So like if you read the story right. The Alchemist, where you know, you find your treasure where you began. Mm. And so to now have the West Side Market,
yeah,
and be able to, you know, it's a beautiful operation. So I've been able to, you know, I've laid eyes on, you know, what's provided there, the fact that you distribute to supermarkets and it is Black owned. Kind of talk about the importance of that, right?
Okay.
Like the importance of the West Side Market, and from an economic perspective, and even from us as a community, why is that such a big deal?
Yeah, very good question. You know, the first thing is that we have to ask a very fundamental question, is where does wealth come from, right? And when you ask that question, that's a question that for the most part been taught to us, it comes from the bank or come from the wealthy guy. Right. But that's not exactly the reality. So in the state of Georgia, if you was to ask where does wealth come from, or who's the most influential person in wealth in the state of Georgia, most people would say the governor or many other points. The correct sort of space in Georgia, in most states, is the Commission of Agriculture. Mm. OK, the Commission of Agriculture is the person who stewards what God gave everybody for free.
Wow.
That we build our economies off of. Wow. Okay? And so when you think of economy, or just the word itself, economy is eco, that's the environment. Uh-huh. Economics means household accounting. Uh-huh. It's the Latin word for household accounting. Uh-huh. So you have environment, economics is the environment, and then the rest of it's household accounting. Uh-huh. So all economics, all wealth start from the harvesting of land, okay? And so one of the things that we did in order to get the West Side Community Market up and going, but not just the West Side Community Market, really understanding agriculture in itself, was we wanted to develop a relationship with the Commissioner of Agriculture. At the time, it was a guy named Gary Black, Commissioner Black. And he is and was the guy who was the commissioner. Today there's a new commissioner. His name is Tyler Harper. Mm. So if you in Georgia and you are interested in developing wealth, I don't care what your business is, you need to meet the Commissioner of Agriculture.
Wow.
In fact, I am really, really shocked that our community have not really picked up on this. Because if I go fishing in the state of Georgia,
yeah,
I gotta pay for a fishing license that God put the fish in there for free.
Wow.
If you don't, they're going to arrest you.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
There's Valdelia onions in Georgia, right? Valdelia onions are down in Valdelia, Georgia. If you grow them out of season and you call them Valdelia onions, you got a problem.
Wow.
Okay? These are regulatory. The land and the harvesting is all regulatory work. So, and I'm giving this more backdrop because the West Side Community Market is a great business,
yeah,
but it's one part of what we do.
Yeah.
It's really a pilot project. When I say pilot, it's a project that we organized as an example to our community. Mm-hmm. It's an example of repair or reparations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what does that look like, right? What that looks like is when Arthur Blank, who owns the Falcons, when you think of Arthur Blank, you think of a billionaire. You think of Home Depot. You think of Atlanta Falcons. Arthur Blank moved Home Depot in the South, particularly in Georgia, because it's the middle of a forest. There's wood mills to the north, south, east, and west. And he sells them in the form of 2x4s and 4x6s and plywood. That's pine that's on them shelves. Okay, so wealth, when I was a kid, they said, well, you think money grow on trees?
Right. Yes.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Right, right,
but we didn't understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a document that I want you get a chance to pull it up. Mm-hmm. It's called Georgia Ag Snapshot. Mm-hmm. If you're listening right now, you can Google this. And this gives you an idea why we started West Side Community Market. So if you go to Georgia Ag Snapshot.
Sean, you can't see that, the battery on there, right?
drop. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay. So if you go to Georgia Ag Snapshot, this is going to come up, publication. And it's done by the University of Georgia. And they do it, they've been doing it for a long time. But if you go back and just click on 2024, okay, this is why this is so important for us to understand. And as our listeners and viewers are understanding this, when you Google that, you see UGA come up, and you're going to see this piece here. Okay, and just scroll down to the second page of it. Read the whole thing because it's very valuable to you. But on the second page, I'm sorry, it's actually.
Hey, it's Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesac and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Want to skip the trial and error so you can head straight to success? Join me and incredible guests like Olympic legend Sean White and NFL superstar Rob Gronkowski as we share the lessons and mistakes that shaped our journeys. Ready to save yourself 25 years? Tune in on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Page 5. In 2022, agriculture and related industries contributed $83.6 billion to the Georgia economy.
Wow.
Okay. And an output to Georgia's $1.4 trillion economy. Just one state in 1 year.
Right.
$1.4 trillion. Wow. That's what God gave as what's called the bounty of the lands. Mm-hmm. And at some point, we have to find a way to an entry point. Mm-hmm. When we think about Coca-Cola, and this is another piece that helped me understand what Westside Community Market could do. Mm-hmm. Coca-Cola is one of the, we think of a biggest brand in the world, one of the largest brands in the world. And I would ask you, when you think of Coca-Cola, what do you think of?
I think of sodas. I think of, you know.
They're the largest corn farmers in the world.
Wow.
They're farmers. In fact, they sell they sell the corn in the form of corn syrup. So there's a company called Arthur Daniel Midland. And Arthur Daniel Midland, they process the corn into these different products. And then they sell it to the bottling companies. The bottling companies take that same corn that we don't even realize is corn, and we turn that into a beverage. Mm. And then and that beverage is now marketed to the community. Mm. But they're farmers. So for us, when I say us, I'm talking about specifically for the black world. We have to find a way to be more conscious about land production and land distribution in the supply chain. That's where all the wealth is. Mm. And in fact, Westside Community Market, like I said, it started off as a pilot project. I just needed to prove that this is our way forward. Mm. And so I chose a space that was... So one of the things that's so important, and I encourage you, if you're in Detroit or you in Chicago, or you in New York, or you in St. Louis or Cleveland, these cities that got large black pop, Baltimore, right now Baltimore's doing a lot of big things. These cities have a lot of buildings there. One of the ways into the supply chain is buying an asset, having an asset like a cold storage warehouse. Cold storage is a part of the national food supply chain. Okay, it's part of Homeland Security. So when you have a cold storage warehouse, this is a part of food security. So I encourage you to buy a cold storage warehouse, okay? Because there's companies that are selling to Kroger's and Publix and Albertsons and various grocery chains, even mom and pop groceries, that need to have cold storage. People are harvesting product from the land, who are packaging those products, and then distributing those products. So Westside Community Market was a part of that. We are located, we have three buildings now, actually. The first one was on Marietta Boulevard. We ended up acquiring, through a partnership, the old Buckhead Beef building. And we started our business in that building. Buckhead Beef is one of the largest beef distribution. It was bought by Cisco. And when they bought them, they built them a new building. And so we took over that building that we're in. That is where we kind of got our feet wet to really understand how cold storage worked. I initially, just as a caveat to how that worked, was we initially focused on distribution, and we realized that that was really competitive. You got to have long, deep pockets to compete with a Cisco or Gordon Foods or these large companies. So what we did, and to learn the business, we just provided services to those companies. So to the suppliers, we say, hey, we'll provide cold storage. You need a box to put your stuff in, we'll rent out a pallet position and put it on a rack. And that helped us understand who was bringing what, where, and where was going. This is called a bill of lading, right? The bill of lading is a document that if everything that's on that truck, okay, or if you're doing a vessel, we do imports as well now. But when everything that's on that truck, you know what's on it. How many cases of this? And who produced it? Oh, it produced at this farm. Okay, so now where's it going? Oh, it's going to Kroger's. What Kroger's location is going to here? So it allowed us to get the data information on what was going where and how it was going. Wow. And so, brothers and sisters, get you a warehouse, get you a cold storage warehouse. Food, clothing, shelter is the primary function of survival.
Facts.
Okay, and yeah. And as you know, John Henry Clark, yep. You know, Marcus Garvey, yep. You know, Elijah Muhammad, you know, many, many great people have said the same thing, yeah. But the pathway has always been murky for us to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And so it took me this global travel, it took me this early childhood experiences to get to that piece.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the other things we're doing right now, brothers, we're importing container loads of products from West Africa. So we have a manufacturing site in Abuja. In West Africa, in Nigeria specifically. So we have a group that we all came together and we opened a pack house where we pack dried fruits, hibiscus, ginger, turmeric, and we import 10 plus containers a month into the U.S. And those products end up all over, you know, all over the South, we got some down in Mexico and so forth. Yeah. And then obviously we work with the farmers here. We really started when Georgia Grown first got started, when Commissioner Black started Georgia Grown. And we work with the Georgia Grown team to develop the logo, the Georgia Grown logo, and gave ideas and input, and also looked at their website. And American Sales Distribution Services, which is our parent company, we were the first distributor for Georgia Grown. And so through that Georgia Grown pathway, we begin to open up more doors.
And so how does the everyday person sort of get involved? I think there's a two-part question, right? Because what percentage of black people own this distribution, right?
Yes.
And then how can someone, everyday person, get involved in that?
So that's a very good question, Brother Ash. First thing first, meet a farmer. Okay? Everybody's not farmers.
Yeah.
Man, the work that it takes and the experience and the learning education it requires to do that, it takes time and energy.
Yeah.
And so I think you could go that route, and I encourage that as well. But for folks that live in a city that don't have access to land like that, go meet a farmer and help that farmer market their product. Mm. Just that simple.
Yep.
Okay, you can look at a map, and you could, or you can go to the Department of Ag website and get a list of all these farmers, and go visit them. Mm. He's making honey. Okay, cool. I want to put my label on the honey. Wow. Let me help you create a label.
Wow.
Okay, so we got a program with our organization where we do private label products.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you are a marketeer and you good at that, and you want to create a label, we'll create a whole white label product for you. We got hibiscus. Hibiscus is one of the great products I think could really do well in our community at scale, because hibiscus could also be used as a meat alternative. Mm. Not only the sorrel that you see people drink, or the teas that helps with the health benefits, but it also can actually be used as an alternative meat, and it actually tastes really good with the actual leaf.
Wow.
A lot of times we drink the red tea steeped, the water off of it, but
especially
the actual meat.
Especially our Caribbean folks, right?
Right.
Sorrels.
And the other way I would say that folks get involved is that distribution is the key.
Yeah.
And the mastery part of distribution is to take possession of a product and then move it along the supply chain.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? So if I have a guy who's producing collard greens, right? I'm going to give you a good one. Right here in Atlanta, there's a restaurant called Tassili's.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Tassili's in the West End.
Yep.
Okay?
Really popular.
Really popular.
Yeah.
And she sells a lot of kale.
Uh-huh.
Okay? She has to buy kale from the large groups because there's no black producer producing kale at scale.
Wow.
Now, there are some. They're just not connected. So if you go to a restaurant like Tassili's that you've been in your neighborhood forever and you want to be involved in a supply chain, you could simply start researching black producers of kale in your community.
Right.
Okay? Right. And then once you find the people that are producing the kale, you come to a company like us, a cold storage, so you can buy bulk and then sell her cases. Okay?
Yeah.
There are ways that absolutely an individual can decide that they're going to change their trajectory around wealth from what God gave everybody for free and play a major significant role in it. I did it, and when I say I did it, astaghfirullah, our path to this process was a trial and error. I did not know what I know today. Okay, it was okay, I need cold storage. Okay, who can I, I'm calling up places. Hey, you guys got cold storage, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, I found someone who want to rent me some pallet spaces. Okay, now I got my first product that's in cold storage. Now I'm trying to get that product moved. Okay, that's challenging. Let me try to figure out how I get my own building then. Okay, so the process of trial and error is something that we've already paid for you. You know, you could reach out to Ash Cash and his consulting firm, and we're a part of this one. So if you want to reach out to our good brother, you know, we'll come in and work with you as a consultant to help you develop your way forward in this agricultural space.
Yeah.
One of the other things that is important, influencers. The wave of economics when it comes to selling goods and services is going to come through influencers. And that influencer that you're connected to, it might be somebody that just does TikToks or somebody who's an entertainer.
Yeah.
Build a relationship of trust with that person and choose a product.
Yeah.
Not just a product that you're buying from some big corporation.
Exactly.
But you need to go to a farm or go to a manufacturer or go to a processing space and brand your product, secure your supply chain. And it's best if you secure the supply chain from beginning to end. As an example, the state of Georgia, one of the number one row crops is cotton. Okay? Prada, Gucci, Nike buy Georgia's cotton to this day. Okay?
Yeah.
So when we look at the Kanyes of the world or Pharrells of the world, they're selling brands. Mm. But how many have a deal where for the next 50 years you're going to buy my cotton?
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine you could go to an influencer and just simply say, brother, look, for the next 50 years, buy my cotton and I'll market your goods. Mm. These types of consciousnesses is what is awakening in our people, really all over the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the great utilities of that we have as a reminder is the last speech of Dr. King. Mm-hmm. You know,
which was not "I Have a Dream," right? Just for clarity.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
He said, What was that bread company, Jesse?
Mm-hmm.
What'd Jesse say?
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
We coming to get our check.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Wonder Bread should be buying our wheat.
Right.
Our grain.
Right.
You know, because it's equity.
Right.
You know, equity isn't, let me just share this real quick. I don't know how much time we got, but you know, I know our time is limited. But equity, when you think of equity, a lot of us think of like shares of a company or a percentage of a company.
Yeah.
But that isn't really the true foundation of equity. Yeah. Equity is a share in the bounty from the Lord.
Mm.
That's equity. That's what real equity looks. So if I'm in a negotiating environment with a major corporation, and I'm just negotiating the anywhere from 5 to 8% of the budget, which is the marketing budget,
right.
I'm not in an equitable situation. There's no equity in that, right?
Fact.
And we got not all, but most black-owned marketing firms are trying to negotiate between 5 and 8% of the budget.
Mm.
A piece of it, not even the whole thing.
Right.
It's just a piece of that 5 to 8%, right? Which may be less than 0.5% of the total budget, if not less. What I'm saying in this scenario is that when you talk about the bounty from the Lord and you're negotiating with a company, the equity looks like the supply chain.
Mm.
Okay, that's where the equity is.
Mm.
Because no matter what you call it, if it's a company like Georgia Pacific or Mars Corporation or you're talking about Procter & Gamble, you know, these companies own these huge brands.
Yeah.
And these brands are harvesting and processing raw material.
Right.
And they need it as a commodity.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why wouldn't it be wise
for
us to negotiate equity?
Man, and that's next level, man. And I hope y'all are paying attention and can really unpack what was being said here, because especially now, right, where, like you said, the influencers have the power, but they're using their power, and myself included, we're getting these deals, if you will, and we're promoting only a small share of what's out there, right? Like, you think about, you know, I think about a brand like Fashion Nova, for instance, that literally have made millions and millions of dollars on the back of our people.
Right.
And so now they're paying, you know, influencers a small percentage of what they, you know, of what they make through promoting and making that business. But what if, like you said, the same influencer goes to the Connect?
Right.
Right. And is able to create a deal where, all right, Fashion Nova, who's supplying your cotton? Who's supplying the material that you're creating the clothes with? And let me get a percentage of that. I think that's the next level. And then even when you talk about private label, right? You know, I think, you know, when I was at your facility, my eyes opened up, right? Where we think about, you know, people or our brothers who are in the healthcare space or need products and services that they can actually attach to their brand, that's something that's important. So now fast forward, because you talked about import, export, Africa.
Yes.
Let's talk about Africa, because so two things I want to make sure we cover before we go. Is Africa and reparations?
Yes, sir.
Right. How important is it for us here in the diaspora, or not in the diaspora, but here in the U.S., you know, that bridge, you know, doing business with our African brothers and sisters?
I mean, thanks for that question. That's a big question. And that is a question that that we have tempered with so closely, but haven't really been able to engage at scale. And let me lay out that. It's extremely important that the Black American that is descendants of the continent, okay, it's extremely important that we understand our position. And that will share with you how important it is for us to bridge with the continent. So what I mean by that, how important for us to understand our position, there is a moral value built into our existence. Okay, my name is Latron Price, right? Price is a European name, okay? Of which that European world believed they owned our people to the degree where I don't know the exact name of my ancestors that are probably on the continent of Africa, okay? When we think of that construct, we heard Malcolm X say, he changes that from Malcolm to Malcolm X, and we hear these stories, but they're so distant in connectivity that we don't even know what that transition looked like. The importance of the Black American in our transatlantic experience, it wasn't just slavery, it's a whole experience, okay? That experience has an enormous moral value. In fact, one of the very unique positions that Prince William or Prince Harry, who would inherit the royal crown in England, can do is to remind the Black American of that moral value, which would give respite to the ills of their fathers. This is a heavy, heavy statement I'm making.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm gonna get to the answer, but I need to understand this framework. So King George II founded the state of Georgia. And today the state of Georgia is named after King George II from England to this day. And he did it with the Georgia Charter. Okay, in the Georgia Charter, he sent James Oglethorpe as the first governor for this state. And James Oglethorpe initially had banned enslavement in the state of Georgia. And King George brought prisoners from England in this thing called the Oglethorpe Plan. And when he brought these prisoners here, and he gave them land, free land, and their responsibility was to harvest the land and send back the bounty of the Lord to England. Now, let me tell you why this is so unique for us as it relates to Africa's Black Americans. We were imprisoned in the form of enslavement. The repair is not a cash. It's important that we have access to capital. That's a societal exchange critical. But the cash or the capital access, if I give it to you without land, there's no repair. It's only a pacifying moment of, let's call it a PPP loan. Okay. But if you give us land, as you gave the prisoners from England to the Black American, and you begin to repair the moral equity as it relates to what God gave us all for free, which is land, and the harvesting and the bounty of the land, and we begin to connect that with the continent, particularly moving U.S. goods into Africa and the African goods into the U.S., it would be what I would definitely consider the real steps to what Moses received as repair. He didn't get a chariot to freedom from Pharaoh. He didn't give him that nice chariot with the gold rims on it. He didn't give him that. God gave him and inspired him to go after land. The inspiration to our community, as I'm sharing this with you, and that question is so heavy, I'm inspiring us to go after land.
Yeah.
And not only go after land, go after land in a way that you are intentional about connecting to the continent.
Yeah.
So in Africa, they have land too, right? But remember, they're under that colonial rule. So the moral equity, not only for the Black American that has built up, there's a moral equity built up on the continent. And when you look at Ghana, or you look at Nigeria, or Togo, or even the Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, you know, they produce these minerals, and they produce these utilities that we use in our cell phones.
Yeah.
Okay. What we could do for trade, and what repair look like, is one, start where your feet are. So if you're in Fulton County, where we are right now, the city of Atlanta, organize a group of your team. It could be your cousins, your aunties, your uncles, your brothers, your sisters. Just organize some folks and say, hey, where can we find land? Mm. And let's start producing something. Mm. Okay? Now, it costs money, right? So we might be from the hood, and we might be on public assistance, right? They got USDA loans.
Mm.
To help you buy land. And remember that moral equity, if enough of us request the access, there's a flood of opportunity comes. Most importantly, we gotta know to go look. Okay?
Yeah.
So we should get very familiar with the USDA website. We should get very familiar with the Farm Service Agency. Farm Service Agency, when you run this, I want you to put these websites at the bottom of the thing.
Yep, yep.
So the USDA.gov and the Farm Service Agency. And you can look at your location. So when you go to location, and let me tell you what the Farm Service Agency is, so we really know what that is, right? The Farm Service Agency is a consultant that the federal government pays for to local communities to develop the farms.
Wow.
Okay, so they're paid staff, personnel, that is there to help you navigate the resources to start in a farm.
Wow.
To collect from the bounty of the Lord.
Yeah.
Let me say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other piece about Africa that I wanted to just quickly touch on, we're in the middle of some really unique things with our organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we have several different parts of our company.
Mm-hmm.
One of our companies is American Sales and Distribution Services. Mm-hmm. And we're marketing to African producers. We're marketing to governments across the continent. We're marketing to cooperatives to aggregate commodities that we could distribute to the U.S. market. So where's usually going from U.S., I'm going to use an example, Kraft Foods going over there, we're saying, hey, we're going to take your consumable goods and let's bring those here and let's get deals in the markets to this Black population here in the U.S., the consumable market, the consumable goods. And it's not just Black. We know one thing about Africa is it's one of those frontiers where food is really still real food.
Yeah.
Okay. So they don't call it organic because there's organic policy that's made. You got to pay for that, right? And there's a whole navigation for that. But these are best practices. This is a seed, soil, and God's mercy. Okay. Yeah. And they're getting a harvest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So a tomato going to taste like a tomato. Okay.
Right.
And so the best practice that's coming out of Africa,
yeah,
the soil is so rich. I don't know. Have you been? Have you had
it? Not yet. Not yet. In God's will. Inshallah.
Okay.
I will be there.
We got witnesses.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, we got witnesses.
Yes, sir.
Now, Ash Cash.
Yes, sir.
We're going to do the Ash Cash Africa tour.
Mm.
Okay?
All right. It's on tape.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. We're going to do the Ash Cash Africa tour, and we're going to connect with the English-speaking countries first.
Yeah.
We're coming to the Francophone countries,
but
we're going to connect with the English-speaking countries just to make it easy for connectivity.
Mm.
And tourism.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Hey, Shot, you ready? Inside the Vault Africa. You know where you heard it first. Right?
Inside the Vault Africa. Let's go. So
yeah,
we're going to make that happen, man.
Yes, sir. We have to. Yes, sir. God's will.
When we do that.
Yeah.
And you start making that comments on this product. Mind you, they watch this all over the world.
Absolutely.
Okay. So yeah. So right now.
Because actually, like, true story, in We chart in a lot of countries in Africa.
Wow.
Already.
Yeah. Wow.
So we're in 156 countries. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, my brother's on the continent. I tell you, it's we coming. Yeah. We come. We've already come.
Yeah.
Okay. Many of us come, but particularly your platform, brother. Mm-hmm. You have you've been blessed with the ability to communicate.
Yes.
And you understand finance. You understand the value of capital.
Yes.
You understand people and personalities. Those who matriculate from, as a sister you just had, from poverty mm-hmm. into wealth.
Yes.
Okay. One of the challenges is we don't know what to do with our wealth.
100%. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brother, as you're doing this and we're saying we're going to Africa, mm-hmm. we're not just going to go to Africa. We want to say, hey, what access to land mm-hmm. that is producing land mm-hmm. that we can find relationship with?
Yes.
What access to U.S. estates as it relates to real estate in supply chain can we acquire? Mm. Brother, if you just make that a part of your mission, mm. you know, and you God has blessed you to see it through books.
Yes.
Right? How many books you got?
15 right now.
Say it again.
15.
You have 15 books.
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
So you see a product go from an idea mm-hmm. onto a canvas of paper.
Yeah.
And then that becomes formed into a book. Mm-hmm. And that product is being sold. And there's a supply chain to that book.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you were able to reshape that and say, not only am I going to do books, I'm going to do things that allow us to survive in the society,
yeah.
such as food, clothing, or shelter.
100%.
Okay. Yeah. And you begin to put products behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do we put products behind it, we put the influence, because you can get a white label product mm-hmm. and it can sit on shelves.
100%, yeah.
Okay, and yeah. it have dust on it,
yeah.
right? Or you end up throwing it away.
Mm-hmm.
No. We don't want that. What we're looking for is the engagement of people to engage in the value of a product.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as an example, we talked about the kale, right? Mm-hmm. To Sealy's. Buys a lot of kale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The farm that is producing the kale, and I mean this with love, is not coming from our community.
Yeah.
But it's a consumable product.
Right.
That's to replicate it. It's a useful tool.
Right.
We just keep harvesting the kale.
Right.
These are the products that allow for a school to be built, for a hospital to be formed.
Yeah.
For what's called repair. Repair is not just having a Gucci bag and a nice house
right.
and a home. That ain't reparation.
Right.
Okay. Reparation is to develop a community that's self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Okay. When you look at the repair that was provided to the Japanese,
yes.
you look at the repair that was provided to the Jewish community,
yes.
you look at the repair that was provided to this is a very controversial piece. The repair that was provided to European white men mm-hmm. and women.
Yeah.
That reparation, just in the end of slavery, there was a loss of debt from the debtors.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So when the Royal Crown had paid for these people to come over here on these boats mm-hmm. and put all this money up, and they took this land, and they believed they had a debt. When they went to Haiti, and they believed that they sent investment into setting up Haiti and getting Haiti established, they believed they had a debt.
Mm.
It was a repair paid. Mm. Haiti paid a repair to France.
Yeah. $60 billion.
Come with it.
$60
billion. $60 billion.
Crazy.
Imagine what the Royal Crown was paid for the South.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the United States, that we don't even know those dollars.
Yeah. yeah.
Have anybody talked about those dollars?
Yeah, nobody talks about it. It's a fact.
It's real money.
Yeah.
And not only was real, there's a special relationship with England and the U.S. to this day.
Mm. Mm.
And that special relationship, you know, when I look at the television, I see Prince William's right now, King Charles is on the throne, right?
Mm.
Why do I know that?
Mm.
Why is that relevant to my life in America?
Mm.
Because it's a special relationship of wealth and
right.
debt.
Right.
So to that point, and to the heavy thoughts that we're dropping here,
man,
we need to make sure that Africa becomes our trading partner, and we need to take advantage of the programs called Agora. Agora is one of the U.S. incentive programs for tax-free, duty-free goods from Africa to come into the U.S. Okay, wow. So if your minister of trade and investment on the continent of Africa, reach out to Ash Cash.
Let's go. Listen, y'all, we're going to have to do a part two because there's so much I want to unpack. But listen, I'm going to need y'all. Number one, y'all going to have to rewind and listen to, go to all of the sites, right? I know you didn't go through the sites, or you could have paused it and went to the sites. But go to the sites, really learn about the power of agriculture, really learn about true wealth, right, that comes from the land, that comes from God, the Most High God has provided for us for free. Every time you said that, I kept thinking about the meme with Orlando Brown. Uh-huh. He was like, they make us pay for apples,
right?
For water, God has given it to us for free,
right?
So if people want to connect with you,
yes,
where can they find you?
Well, you can reach me, you know, the easy way. I'm gonna just put you to social media. Instagram is Latron P. At Latron P, that's LATRON, the letter P. I'm in Atlanta. I'm easy to find. Latron Price is my name. Yep. And then we're also at the State Farmers Market off 75, the largest food depot in the Southeast. The largest food depot in the Southeast. We have a warehouse there. We have an operation there. And you can find me there as well. And then more than that, brother, I tell you, you can find me at the Atlanta Masjid. Yes. Okay, the Atlanta Masjid on Glenwood. Come join us. You know, it's a different day where diversity of faith becomes one faith. And I want to talk about that one day. I don't know if this is the day, but, you know, we got to really understand what's the difference between a Christian and a Muslim.
Yes. Can we talk about that real quick? Because and real quick, right? Because
I got time.
The one thing that, you know, I grew up Christian as well.
Yeah.
I am a proud Muslim. Right. Right. And one of the things I'm not going to say hate, right? Because that's not even in my spirit to do. But there is a hijacking that I call a hijacking of God.
Right.
That I see happens all the time. And I'll just say specifically, you know, recently I posted something about Dawn Staley, who, you know, won the women's basketball national championship. Mm. And I found it interesting that every time she kept giving the glory to God.
Right.
And I love that, right? I love that. They tried to make her apologize for it. She kept making, you know, giving the glory to God. And so I posted about it and I kept saying, man, you know, I love this and I'm sharing this beautiful thing. And there was just this hijacking of, you know, she's talking about Jesus Christ, right? She's talking about Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ. And I'm saying, you know, I'm saying to the people in the comments, I'm not saying this, but in my head, I'm saying, why is there such a division between what Christians may believe about Muslims?
Mm.
And, you know, like, why is there such a division? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I will. Bismillah. So, first of all, I consider myself a Christian. And I'm also a Muslim. Mm-hmm. And there's a great story about the Abyssinian king and the Prophet Muhammad. When Prophet Muhammad was being chased, he fled. And he fled over to Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. And this is a Christian community that he fled to. And when they seen him make prayer and they dialogued with him, the Abyssinian king said to him, what is the difference between Islam and Christianity? And the response was a line in the sand. Hmm. There's nothing, there's no difference.
Yeah.
Now, to your question, to your point, Christianity is such a beautiful faith when it's done purely for the heart. Hmm. And I love that about the way I grew up.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the understanding of the creation,
yes.
Islam gives us beautiful tie into all of that heart love and trial that and triumph that comes through Christianity, the Quran allows that to be merged into almost a scenic view of God.
100%.
Okay, now here's where you got these diversions of thought, right? Or these diversities, not the diversions, they really off track. There is a competition over God, but yet everybody say there's only one God.
Yes.
Okay, so when you're talking about the fact that we're talking about the same God,
right?
No matter what you call him be, right. Yahweh, Islam, Muhammad, not Muhammad, Yahweh, Allah, even when they call Isa the Lord or Jesus, there's a beautiful scripture in Quran. And this, I couldn't accept Islam without knowing this surah. And so I encourage our community, those that are battling over this very simple piece, to go to the Holy Quran and go to chapter 3. This is the Quran. The Quran is the spiritual document. We call it our book. The spiritual document that leads the faith. Okay. In chapter 3, which is called a surah, chapter 3, an ayat start at, you can read the whole thing. It's called the family of Imran. But I'm gonna start at 45. I will start a little earlier than that, but I want to, just for the sake of time, I want to jump to 45. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That means, in the name of God, the most merciful, most beneficent, most merciful.